session number 11222, rule 1.
Mr. Woods, rule 1, when was it that you joined the Navy? Do you remember the year?
Before the war.
Long before the war?
Yes. It was when I joined...
How old were you when you joined?
1928 it was, I joined. I was 16.
So that must be 1930, I think, because you were born in 1914.
Yes.
Why did you decide to join?
Well, I don't know, it was the glamour of it, I suppose, really. And I look forward to travelling abroad.
Now, when Chamberlain made the announcement that we were at war with Germany in September 1939, what were you doing then? Were you on the Foxhound?
I was on the Foxhound, yes.
What kind of a ship was she?
She was a destroyer, about 1,300 tonnes, I believe she was.
What was she like to live aboard?
Well, she was actually those ships in those days, they were just built for war alone, you know. It was just a wartime ship, really. You know, built for war, that's all they were built for in those days.
Was there any comfort aboard it at all?
Not really. No, it was just a destroyer, you know, and when you get in rough weather, you know, it's quite intolerable, you know, at times.
Why?
Well, all the mess tables used to collapse, and you used to get a foot of water on the mess decks quite often, you know. And it was, what can I say, it was really just a ship for war, really.
What was your job on board?
I was what is known as a HGR, high gunnery rating, and I was a gun layer and in charge of the gun.
What kind of a gun was it?
It was a 4.7 BL breech loading gun, you know. And it was a surface. It was a surface gun. So
you mean it was for other ships rather than for planes?
Oh yes, it was for surface firing. You know, 4.7s. We had smaller weapons for aircraft than that. They had the .5s, what they called the .5s, in one mounting, you know. And also torpedo tubes. They had 6 torpedo tubes, I believe, my memory serves me right. And they had electrically controlled guns from the director, you know, and I was a trainer, and my opposite number was a layer. It's my job to look through the telescope and get on the target by training the gun round, and my opposite number was the one who used to get on it vertically up and down, you know, onto the target. And we actually controlled all the guns from up there, and we fired the guns from up there. There was, in fact, every movement made by the director moved red pointers in the gun receivers, and they moved their black pointers, which represent the gun, in line with the red. So actually, they never saw the target. We were the only ones that was looking at the target at the time, you know. And my opposite number, he fired it actually electrically. And I suppose very, very efficient type of firing in those days.
What was the crew like aboard the Foxhound?
Oh, they were very cheerful lot, you know. very happy lot, I thought they were. And you know, we all got on well together. We was all in it together, you know. It's more as a big team, really.
And the captain and the officers?
Oh yes, the captain. Now he was. I can't remember his name now, but he was quite a brave man, you know. And the first lieutenant, he was a jolly sort of a bloke, you know. He the Jimmy, as he was known as. He, what can I say? He was a leg puller, if you know what I mean. He sort of pulled your leg, you know, even during the action. He was having a go, pulling my leg. Why didn't you get on that line straight away or something like that, you know? And I was allowed to answer back, you know.
Was he saying it in a joking way?
Oh, yes, it was in a joking way, yeah, but. He was stern about it, you know, but he wasn't sort of trying to be put me down or anything like that. And of course, he treated the others the same. In the director tower, there was a director layer, director trainer, myself, a sight setter, and at the back there was the control officer, which was Jimmy, first lieutenant. And another officer who was, he was a spotting officer. And this particular battle was unlike, you know, at sea. It was in like, it's like battling in a confined space, you know.
This is at Narvik.
It's at Narvik, yeah. And, you know, it didn't seem possible that a naval battle could take place in Sydney.
We'll say more about Narvik in a minute, but I think that before we do,
yes,
you, where was, if you can tell me about the early part of the war, where was Foxhound based?
She was based on Scapa Flow. We went to Scapa Flow.
What were her duties in the first part of the war?
She was, the first part she was doing convoy duties, and then we joined up with the Kelly. HMS Kelly, which is a Louis Mountbatten ship, and then we set sail for Iceland to try and intercept the escort that the German enemy ships that were escorting the City of Flint.
What was the City of Flint?
It was a merchant ship. It was an American merchant ship, and though we never saw it, but this is our. Intelligence that we'd got, you know, from that. And we went up to Iceland, and we missed them, or they escaped us, I know that. And we returned, and I think I went back to Scapa Flow.
And after that, I think that you were with the Ark Royal.
With the Ark Royal, yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Yes, we used to. We was there was four destroyers, Foxhound and three others, and our job was to find the enemy U-boats on the surface. We used to at dawn. She used to fly her ships off, fly her planes off, beg your pardon, fly her planes off, and they'd send back the signal that they'd found a U-boat on the surface charging its batteries, and the escort would go off to attack them. And what happened on this occasion was that we were sent after a target, and we heard an explosion. And we steamed back full speed and immediately got in contact with a German U-boat. And, of course, obviously the explosion was a torpedo just missing the Ark Royal. And we brought the... It came up after a while. The U-boat came up onto the surface. And there was two... engineer probably, and there was two Germans that stayed behind to put a charge on, and then they jumped overboard, and the whole lot was swimming in the sea, and the U-boat sunk, and we sent our boats away, lifeboats away, to pick them up, and they were swimming the opposite way to us, away from the ship. And when we asked them why, they said that they was getting away from the ship because they'd been told that we'd machine gun them in the water. Anyway, the U-boat commander was piped aboard the ship, and the first lieutenant met him, and the first words the U-boat commander said was, "Did I get that carrier?" And of course Jimmy looked stonily at him, you know, no, never said a word, and said, I'll see you, sir, up to meet the captain on the bridge." And he took him up to the bridge, and that was that. And we took the others, the crew, picked all the crew up, and we landed them at Greenock in Scotland as prisoners of war.
What U-boat was that?
U-39.
And so it had been forced to the surface with
depth charge
from
the Foxhound. Yeah, yeah. We was the only one in the vicinity at that time, and we were the first one to get in contact with it.
Did you go in one of the lifeboats?
No, I didn't. Not on this occasion. No, I didn't. No.
Did you see the Germans?
Oh yes, yes. We had them on board the ship, and we during the trip they was. Having quite a while of a time. They was all playing musical instruments on the upper deck. I did have a photo of them, but I don't know what's happened to it. Got it, and I got lost somewhere. And they were really happy lot, you know. I was happy that they weren't machine gunned, I suppose.
What condition were they in?
Oh, very fit. They all seemed so fit. There was none injured. So they all escaped from injury. You know.
Did the captain of the Foxhound congratulate the crew for getting the U-boat?
Oh, yes. Afterwards, yeah, when we got into port, yeah. Yes.
Now, was that in 1939?
That was in 1939, yes.
Before Christmas?
Yes. I think so.
Can you tell me now about Narvik, about what you remember about it in
yes.
detail?
Yes, I remember going from the sea into this field, or it's an opening, and I think it was named the Offutt Field. And it was a long winding field, and we was in the lead actually, because we swept the channel. Foxhound was detailed to sweep the channel for mines. The orders was that we would, when we got into action, we would chop the towing wire, or the blacksmith would, and then we would go into action. Actually, when we got into the opening of Narvik Bay, much to our amazement, there was three German destroyers zigzagging up and down in a farther field. I'm not sure what it was called, and they opened fire at us first, you know, and we was in a precarious position because we was broadside on at the time, chopping this wire. Anyway, that we overcome that, and
were you hit?
No, we wasn't hit until later, and that was by a machine gun. We lost one of our crew. Well, we proceeded up, and on the starboard side we saw a enemy destroyer, and that was our target. And I trained the director round and got my crosswires on the upper deck, and the lad did the same, and we opened fire. And I think other ships opened fire on that one as well. And before long, it was a blazing torch, and I've never experienced seeing a ship of steel alight. You know, absolutely alight, and the and it glowed like a, what can I say? It was like a torch inside, in the interior, I suppose, where the ammunition had caught light. We went on further and engaged another destroyer that was right ahead, and that was put out of action after a short time. And then...
what did that one look like?
That looked like one of the... they were the Roder class destroyers, the Germans. They were carried 5.9 guns, a heavier armament than ours. And we'd put paid to about three or four destroyers that were alight. We went further on, and there was one lying alongside the jetty, and the skipper decided to board it and get our papers and that, so forth. As we went in amongst the wrecks to board this destroyer, we thought it was deserted, and a man appeared on the forecastle with a machine gun and opened up at us, and a ricochet, see the funnel, the ricochet from a funnel, that's what we gathered afterwards, hit one of our men on the 0.5 platform, and it went into his head. And immediately we opened fire with a 4.7 and blew the ship more or less apart, the forecastle anyway, and we heard no more from it then after that. We probably killed the fire of the machine gun. And it was my messmate, actually, and I'll always remember his name, because his name was Maidstone, and he come from Maidstone in Kent, and he was a young HO, what he called, or still is only, about 19 years old.
And so he was the one who was hit in the head?
Yes, and extraordinary part about it was, he walked down from the mess deck under his own, from the 0.5 gun deck under his own steam, laid on our mess door, and died. And doctor came down to him, because he was dead when he arrived. During the action, the Cossack was very much in action, and I always remember that she was opening fire and going in close to fire at the shore guns. There was quite a few shore guns that the Germans had brought ashore, and only the lieutenant that was the spotting officer, I always remember him saying, "Isn't it marvellous, look at that ship, this is a Cossack, it's sinking and it's firing with all guns," and he thought it was sinking, it gave the impression it was sinking, but it wasn't, of course. But they received so many casualties on their mess deck, our doctor had to go aboard and tend to the wounded. Then after the battle, I think various passages in the fields, other ships was in there, and our ships went inside after them. I didn't see much of that, of course. After the battle we picked up German survivors, and many of them, and we picked them up, put them on our mess deck, and we had about five or six German dead on there that had died during that time. And in particular, there was one a German lieutenant who he picked up, brought aboard. He had his arm blown off, and he was running about the deck, cursing and swearing about in perfect English, calling us a load of cowards. And he immediately disappeared over the side again, and we never saw him no more. But the Germans that we carried, well, after the battle, if I can go on to after the battle, we was left, Foxhound was left as one of the guard ships in the bay, which we was a little bit timorous about, because we thought, well, you know, we're the only ones here now, and we didn't know whether the Germans were going to come back. But it was difficult to see how many German destroyers was discovered. They seemed to be popping up from everywhere, you know. And they say there was only six there, but there must have been more, because we saw three to the starboard burning, and we saw one that we tried to board. Then there was others hidden away in some of the avenues of Narvik Bay, you know, there's quite a few of them. So how many there was, I don't know. I don't know what the official figures were, but we understood there was about nine. And then we realised that the H boats had taken care of some of them as well. So all in all, I reckon there must have been about two flotillas, and for both the battles, you know.
When you picked the German POWs up, were they in lifeboats?
No, they were just swimming in the sea. It wasn't in lifeboats at all. There was, the sea was literally covered with Germans swimming, you know. Of course, the other ships picked them up as well.
So what condition were they in when you got them on board?
Well, as I said, the there was about four or five actual corpses on our mess deck. And
but they must have been extremely cold.
Yes, that's right. They must have been hypothermia or something like that that killed them, because they died on our mess deck, in actual fact. We had a couple of survivors, which we took as prisoners of war, and they were in a bad state, but they recovered all right. After the battle, of course, we had some of our merchant ships on board, merchant ships crews on board that came, you know, that we took aboard. And we had about, I would say, about eight in each mess, you know. Who'd been captured by the Germans in the ships that were alongside in Narvik. And I always remember one in particular. I was a caterer of the mess. And he kept saying to me, can I have a tin of tomatoes? And he was back several times after that, and he'd eat these and straight out the tin, you know.
He was an American, wasn't he?
He was a Canadian, yeah. And the others we took on board, we landed them in Greenock, I think, yeah. And of course, we had the barrels at sea on the way back, when we did eventually get to sea. But we buried the Germans, and we buried our own messmate.
What about this German who was running about with his arm missing? Did he just jump over the side?
Yes, he just jumped over. He ran round, and he was... I could hear him sort of... saying, you know, swear words, the British, the cowards, we never stood a chance, and all this business, you know. And nobody said anything to him, didn't have time, because he just ran around like a chicken about his head, you know, running round and round in a mad frenzy. I expect the poor fellow was feeling that way, and he jumped straight over the side.
So he was demented, was he?
Yes, yes. We never saw him no more. And next thing, as I say, we just left as a guard ship. And
what was the weather like during the Second Battle of Narvik?
It was snowing and very misty. So it was about 12 noon, it was quite light. We actually entered Offutt Fjord, I would say about 10 o'clock. And we understood it was about a 30-mile trip from the sea to Narvik Bay. And it struck me that, you know, that the hills either side were so close, you know, it didn't seem possible, you know, that you could get up there. And when you consider the war spite, 30,000 tonnes, was up there as well. It was incredible, really.
Did you see HMS Hardy, the remains of it from the first battle?
Yes, we saw a beached on our port side as we proceeded up the into Narvik Bay.
What do you remember doing on board the Foxhound after the Battle of Narvik?
Well, I remember sort of we're more or less clearing up, you know, after the battle in Narvik Bay, which as a guard ship, you know, and we was I think that we actually was making the prisoners comfortable, you know, and also our merchantmen, you know, and keeping them well fed and that.
Did the prisoners seem appreciative or were they defiant?
They were defiant right to the end, yes. The only, on that particular occasion, of course, but
what were they saying?
Well, they reckoned that they were badly treated by the British, you know, because you know it was we were cowards to treat them in that way.
Why did they keep saying that the British were cowards?
I don't know really. They thought that we was an overwhelming force, I suppose, and we'd take advantage of the fact, you know. But of course, that wasn't the case. It was mainly a ship-to-ship action, destroyer battle, really. Though the Big Brother Warspite was there, and she was there to silence the shore guns, and she'd fire over the top of us at times, you know, until there was no. And I think that seeing the battle wagon, you know, as we called it, that they thought they were done by, you know. They give a very good account of themselves, and they actually opened fire on us as soon as they spotted us, you know, coming into Narvik Bay. So it was a furious battle, you know. It was something. It was frantic, really, that everyone was peppering one another, you know. And it was definitely a ship-to-ship action, you know, a sort of battle that you never see in normal times. Usually they're on the open sea, you know, in this long range battles, but this was ship to ship and it was quite close up. It reminded me of, well, it's similar to the Battle of Trafalgar, really, you know, it's that type of a battle. And they gave us, you know,